All right, welcome to the free stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. Brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. I am Bobby Fenton, here for the week 4 edition of the show, here for the first loss of the season edition of the show. And hopefully not too many of these, but it was a tough one on Monday night. We're going to talk all about the Monday night game, although of course, being later in the week, we're going to look ahead to the game in Chicago as the Bucks try to enter their bye week at 3-1. I hate to sound cliche, and you've probably had this thought to yourself already because it's so cliche, but a win in Chicago on Sunday, which will be no small task, but if you get that win, 3-1 into the bye week, every single one of you people out there, including me, would have taken that before the season started. But that does not erase the sting of a loss on Monday Night Football, especially when it's a game you very well could have and probably should have won. It didn't have to be that way. But there were reasons to be concerned after watching that one. There were also, I think, a lot of reasons to be excited after watching that one. We'll get to it all, but thank you for joining us as I record this show here on Thursday afternoon, as always. I shouldn't say as always, but we try to have it out on Thursday and get it ready for the Thursday afternoon release. But just to give you a frame of reference, that's what it is as I record right now. And the free stretch is brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. Bill Curry, Tampa's first family of Ford, is proud to announce a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. This includes unlimited years, unlimited miles, plus a 10-year roadside assistance program and 1 year of complimentary service. You bring it in, they take care of it. See all the details at BillCurryFord.com. Sean Sullivan is the new general manager at Bill Curry Ford. If you see him, to receive a Joe Bucks Fan discount on top of the already transparent online pricing you're going to see, just mention Joe Bucks Fan when you're down there, and they'll take care of you with a little bit of a discount, which again, all you have to do is mention the show, the website, the Joes, just say Joe Bucks Fan, and you're good to go. And Bill Curry Ford has proudly served this community for 58 years. 58 years! And they're still going strong just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway, or you can start shopping right now if you just go to BillCurryFord.com. Great people over there, and I have a lot of fond memories, as I always say, of all the remotes I used to do with Big Poppy Dave Druda. If he's out there listening, used to get us set up in that beautiful showroom, great spot to do a show. I am also recording this show today inside of a Ford, but not quite on the showroom floor. I'm inside my own Ford Explorer, which I love and intend to get a new one whenever it is I get a new car, because I'm a Ford guy, I always have been. I won't get to do a whole show on cars, but I'm the type of guy, you know, I beat them up a little bit. And those of you who maybe know me personally know my driving habits, and maybe you've been cut off by me on the road. But either way, I like a durable car. That's why I've always been into the Fords. And they're great for recording podcasts, too, which is where I am right now. So let's talk about first Monday Night Football. And again, doing my show later in the week, and I've thought about doing a smaller show, like a reaction show right after the games. But for now, we're still doing one a week. So I know after a few days, everybody's ready to move on and look ahead. But I want to talk about a couple things on Monday Night Football. First of all, as always, Monday Night Football gets my goosebumps just popping out of my forearms. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like seeing your team in prime time. There's nothing like seeing your team be like the special team on the stage that you know everybody in the country is watching. And let's face it, and I love this about Tampa, by the way. I'm not trying to be one of the premier, you know, up and coming, like the cities that all the douchey people move to and then don't stop talking about. Like, I don't want to be Austin or Denver or anything like that. I just want to be little old Tampa, which is a phenomenal place to live. And we're just right how we have it, I think. Although it is getting bigger, the secret's out. But the point is, Tampa doesn't get a lot of national attention, at least not sports-wise. And it's been that way forever. It'll continue to be that way forever. And that's fine with me. But every once in a while, you get little gems like that, like Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football or things like that. And it's exciting. It really is. And so it's disappointing that the Bucks weren't able to win the game. Obviously, you want to see them, you know, they won their first two games Sunday at 1 o'clock. Probably not that many people outside of here in our opponent's cities watch those games. And they've got 13 more on Sunday at 1 o'clock that probably not a lot of people are going to watch either. And that's fine. But the one that's on Monday night, you want to get that one. You want to really show out, as they say. And I certainly thought the game was entertaining, so the two teams did put on a great show. I thought it was a really fun game to watch. I think if you're somebody who is sitting at home in a neutral city, not either Pittsburgh or the Tampa Bay area, and you're watching Monday Night Football, as so many football fans do, I think you were pretty pleased with that one if you stuck with it into the second half. But the Bucs came up short, and, you know, if you look at them on primetime overall, they're actually not too bad. They're now 3-2 on Monday Night Football since 2010. They've only been on Sunday Night Football, which is kind of now the premier show that Monday Night Football used to be, but they're now 1-1 on Sunday Night Football, or are still 1-1 on Sunday Night Football since 2006. Only had two appearances on that in almost 12 years. And actually, Thursday night, they're pretty bad. We remember all the blowouts they had the past few years and some of the real stinkers they've turned in. They're 1-5 on Thursday Night Football. But on Monday Night Football in the past, you know, 8 years, winning record still. I thought the stadium looked great on TV. The field, you know, having USF play there on Saturday and all the rain and everything, could have gotten beat up a lot worse than it did. I thought the crew did a great job. I love seeing the painted in end zones. You know, it's a big game. It's either a playoff game or a primetime game or maybe a late December game with implications. They don't paint the end zones in for every one of them, and I'm glad they don't, because it should only be for the special occasions. So that was kind of cool. And then they came out in the first half, and it looked like a Buck game that was more reminiscent of last year, where the Bucks got behind so often, although the Bucks did lead 7-0 in this game. But you know, that eventually turned into 23-7. And then the furious comeback in the second half, which they also perfected last year, that just came up short. That happened against the Cardinals, I remember. Happened against the Bills, I remember. Happened against the Falcons. I think the Vikings game was like that too. Am I wrong? They did that a lot last year. And as opposed to jumping all over people, they got behind. And it was inevitable. Ryan Fitzpatrick wasn't quite as sharp as he had been, and the turnovers really hurt the Bucs. But you know what? He played a pretty good game. He played a pretty good game. If you look at overall of his 50 throws, I don't think very many of them were bad throws. Obviously, the interception that was returned for a touchdown in goal line was just a horrific play. One of those you wish you had back. He had another interception on a deflected ball. And he had another one that wasn't a great throw either. So, you know, again, turnovers were the big story of the first half. And the Bucs got behind. I never thought, even at 30-10, that the game was over. I felt like, and maybe that's from being conditioned in the first couple of weeks, that this team can score points quickly. They can score points in bunches. And, you know, maybe that rubs off on us as fans. Because even at 30-10, I was like, you know what? They might be able to do this. And certainly it looked like they were going to do it for a little while there. But at the end of the day, and here's what it came down to for me. You know, the defense didn't look great, and there's some concerns going forward, but they shut the Steelers out in the second half, and they gave the Bucs a chance to win. I'm not going to jump on the defense. The offense, conversely, didn't look great, but they got the Bucs back in the game in the second half. And in the NFL, every year there's games like this. I mean, every team, even the bad teams, has four or five, maybe even six games that could go either way. It comes down to a few plays. And there were a few crucial ones. And what I always stress is cashing in your opportunities in the red zone. Bucks kicked two field goals of under 30 yards in that game. Now, when your defense, who fought their ass off, okay, I'm not saying they didn't try, but when your defense has got their hands full and giving up some points, you can't be kicking field goals of 21 yards. The other one was 28 yards. I was disappointed in the Bucs' lack of aggression, especially the 21-yard field goal. They needed a touchdown there. And the botched scenario before halftime where they kicked that short field goal, where, if you don't remember, the Buccaneers were at the time trailing, I believe it was 23-7. And they needed points. And they were in there inside the goal line. It's under 2 minutes. The Steelers have all three timeouts, and that matters. You have to take that into account, because if you're down there, it's the final snap of the half, and it's fourth and goal from the 4-yard line. You know, maybe you just take the field goal. You know it's the final play of the half anyway. Let's get our 3 points and get out of here. When the other team has three timeouts in like a minute and a half, and you know they're probably going to go down and have a good chance to get points of their own, I really had a problem with Dirk Koetter kicking the field goal there. One, because we you know, you forego the chance to score a touchdown, which they very well could have scored. But two, even if you miss that fourth down attempt and you don't get it, the Steelers now have the ball at their own 4-yard line. They're backed up, and you have a chance to maybe break even there, where you don't score, but they don't score. Whereas if you kick a field goal, even if you make it, you're probably, best case scenario, going to break even. The Steelers are going to go back and kick a field goal. Worst case scenario, you kick your field goal and you say, all right, we got our 3 points. Every little bit counts. We need something. And Steelers go back down and score a touchdown before the end of the half. And now you're losing, instead of 23-7, you're losing 30-10. You just lost a net 4 points because you were too afraid to try for a touchdown your team would have desperately needed before the half. Had a big problem with that. Same thing with the fourth down at the end of the game when the Buccaneers defense, which I did not think they were going to be able to do, but the Buccaneers defense bowed up, got a huge 3-and-out stop against the Steelers, and got the team the ball back when they needed it the most. And I said, okay, hey, wow. You know, before this series started, I figured Pittsburgh would take the air out of the ball, they'd get a couple of big gainers, get those first downs, we'd burn our timeouts, they'd salt this one away, and that'd be that. And the defense stood up. They got the ball back to the Bucs offense. And then you get to a 3-down situation where they completely do nothing on the first 3 downs. Now it's 4th and 10. Now that's a bad spot to be in. But, and it was before the 2-minute warning, the Bucs had 2 timeouts. But, I just don't like the idea of punting when you don't really have a reasonable belief you'll get the ball back again. When you're hoping against hope, maybe we'll get the ball back again. And sure enough, the Buccaneers punted on 4th and 10. Steelers made a couple of plays. One which was aided by a blatant holding call. I mean, one of the most blatant, the play that basically iced the game was Roethlisberger's completion downfield when it looked like he was about to be sacked by Gerald McCoy, then sidestepped McCoy but had more oncoming pressure, and then yank! Number 71 for Pittsburgh puts a big right paw on one of our defensive linemen. I forgot who it was. Just grabs a fistful of jersey and yanks him down. And he is right in front of Roethlisberger. Like, this wasn't some backside hold that probably didn't affect the play. This was directly at the point of attack. Blatant holding call. Uncalled. Roethlisberger completes the pass. First down. We never see the ball again. But, again, that's one of the reasons why you have to go for it in that situation. And Dirk Koetter and Todd Monken together have been so aggressive in the first 2 games, and it didn't seem like that aggressiveness was quite there in the 3rd game. Now, I'm not going to try to read into some big picture philosophical thing here and say, oh, well, they've lost their aggression. Now, it might have just been a 1-game thing. But, yeah, I feel like in the first 2 games, they were playing like a team that was out there trying to go take something that nobody thought was supposed to be theirs. And then you win a couple games, and now all of a sudden you're like, well, got to play it safe. We're 2-0. You know, keep doing what you did those first 2 games all year. Even if you end up going 8-2 out of the gate or whatever. I don't know if that's what I'm not saying that's what's going to happen, but don't lose that underdog, scrappy, you know, all the cliches you want, David versus Goliath. Don't lose that attitude even if you do start winning, because that's why you're winning. And, you know, when it was 4th and 10, people say, oh, Bobby, 4th and 10 is a bad situation to be in. That's a low percentage play. You're probably not going to get that. You're right about that. Okay, but listen. If you're thinking ahead, hey, I'm going for this. This is 4-down territory. I'm not punting this ball. Then maybe on 3rd and 10, instead of trying a low percentage play to try and complete 3rd and 10, maybe you throw it underneath and just get 6 yards. Maybe it's 4th and 4 now instead of 4th and 10. You know, maybe if you're thinking that, hey, I've got 2 downs to do this on 3rd down, hell, you can run a draw on 3rd down. Let me see if I can grab a quick 5 or 6. We'll go for it on 4th and 4 or 4th and 5 anyway. Or, you know, hell, a screenplay. I don't know, anything. Like, any, you know, you run something where you know you'll get a few yards. It maybe isn't a home run play, but you can get a few yards. And maybe if you get lucky, you do get the first down. But they didn't set themselves up very well in that drive. And then, yeah, 4th and 10 sucks. You're behind the 8-ball. There's not a lot of good plays to call on 4th and 10. But I just didn't like going and giving the ball back to Pittsburgh there knowing you probably weren't going to see it again, and they did not. And that was disappointing. And, you know, the thing is, there's so few things you can control as a coach. all these variables, you know, people say, oh, well, the Bucs should have controlled the interceptions and the turnovers. Well, of course, but you can't control that. As a coach, you certainly can't control that, and even as a player. If it was that easy, oh, just don't throw interceptions, and no one would ever throw one. They're going to happen. Fumbles, turnovers, drop passes, things like that. Those are going to happen. You can't control that. There's so few things you can control in a football game that those decisions, which again are directly things you can control, you can say, okay, no, we're going for this. We have control right now. You got to exercise that control. You can't act like your hands are tied and you have to kick. People will say, oh, they failed on third down. They're going to have to kick the field goal or they're going to have to punt now. You don't have to do anything. I thought the botched before the half scenario there, first of all, in the red zone was the biggest thing. And both times they kicked field goals inside of 30 yards and on and on. So again, the defense gave them a chance. I'm not going to go play by play and nitpick. That's for the Monday morning shows and stuff like that right after the games. But the defense gave them a chance in the second half. You can't ask for much more than that. And Fitzpatrick, for his part, played pretty well. And obviously, the three interceptions are bad, and two of them were very, very crucial. But if you look at his actual throw-by-throw, like all 40-whatever throws it was, I didn't think he was very bad at all. And he left a good account of himself, and he certainly, it's not surprising he's going to be the starter in Week 4 at Chicago, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But as for the Bucs, oh, and there's one other thing. Let me just do this real quick. There's one other thing I want to address on Monday night before we move forward. I want to talk about this Fitzpatrick Winston thing, but one more thing, okay? The DeSean Jackson punt return that made the score, we thought, 30-27, only with lots of time left instead of with very little time left, which is what eventually happened, gets called back for a hold on Isaiah Johnson. Now, first of all, in fairness to Isaiah Johnson, when they showed the replay, I didn't think that was a very good call. It definitely wasn't one of those blatant holds that you see all the time on special teams. And they definitely could have left that uncalled, and I don't think anybody would have noticed. I don't think anybody on the Steelers' sideline would have even jumped up and down and said anything. That was kind of a ticky-tack call to me. But with that said, for literally since I can remember watching football, this has been going on, although it has gotten, maybe I'm just an old curmudgeonly guy now, but it seems like it's gotten worse in the last 5-10 years. Every freaking special teams play has a GD holding penalty or block in the back. I mean, it is amazing to me. And again, I got frustrated the other night on Twitter when that play happened and I called players stupid. I'm not going to say the players are stupid. But these guys that play special teams in the NFL, to me it's been proven at this point, they are incapable of following basic, clearly stated rules. You cannot hold. You cannot block in the back. It is not hard not to hold, and it is not hard not to block in the back. You just have to use half an iota of brain power and think a little bit when you're on the field and not do it. And yet, time after time after time after time on special teams plays, up, oh, we got a five or a half the distance here at the end of the return. We got a hold on the way out of there or a block in the back. And it'll be like on a return where the guy didn't even do anything. He returned the ball for like 5 yards, and now you're bumping it back 10 more yards because of a hold or a block in the back. I mean, over and over this happens. And I said this on one of the shows last year, and I'll say it again. If I was a head coach or a special teams coach, I would coach my guys, you know, let's say it's punt return or kickoff return. Line up 10 wide across the field. Whoever catches the ball, he's one guy. The other 10 of you, line up 10 wide across the field. You got 10 lanes, so a few yards apart. Cross your arms like a basketball player setting a pick and then run in a straight line like a big giant comb, 10 guys, 10 teeth. You're all teeth in a 10-tooth comb, running in a straight line with your arms crossed like a basketball player throwing a pick, and just run straight forward. And let the return man decide what he wants to do behind you. Do not use your arms in any way. Do not engage somebody on the other team in any way. Don't block anybody unless they run into you. That's great then, but don't go out of your way to block anybody. And just make lanes, and again, the return guy can decide what he wants to do, and I will bet you, and no one's ever going to try this, so we can't prove it, so it's easy for me to say, but I will bet you your net starting field position, if you did that over the course of, you know, let's take a sample of four games, would be as good or better than your net starting field position with all these blocking schemes they have and all the, oh, we're going to do the wedge here. That, and these guys just freaking hold anyway. I mean, they always do it, and it's completely and utterly useless because the play gets erased. That DeSean Jackson punt return was gigantic. If they get that score to 30-27 with, what was it, 8 minutes left or nine, whatever it was, instead of four or five, they probably win that game. I'll bet you they, or at least they get it to overtime. But you take that touchdown off the board, and the Bucs, to their credit, fought back and still got it to 30-27, but they couldn't get any closer. And these freaking special teams plays, man. And again, I'm not calling the guys stupid. It's easier said than done. I've played special teams before at low levels of football, not the highest level of football like these guys do. But, I mean, don't hold! Don't block anybody. You can't see their numbers, and if your head's not in front of their shoulders, just don't do it. Just let them. If your guy, if I was a coach, I'd say if your guy goes and he makes a huge tackle and knocks our guy's head off, I will not yell at you as loud as I will yell at you if you freaking hold somebody or if you get caught for a block in the back and you take our return and erase it and we get pushed back 10 yards. I mean, nothing pisses me off more, and I think it pisses me off so much more than other penalties because it's so predictable and it happens so often. So again, if there's any high school football coaches listening out there, Pop Warner, whatever, free advice, try it, report back to me. My email's bobbygameday@yahoo.com, or you can find me on Twitter at bobbygameday, okay? Line them up, get the guy who catches the ball, line them, the other 10 guys up 10 wide, cross their arms like they're basketball players setting a pick, and tell them to just run full speed, don't deviate from their lanes, run full speed in a straight line upfield, and let the return man make whatever play he wants to behind them, and that's it. But no flag. Anybody who gets a flag on a special teams play is immediately, at the very least, riding the pine, and at worst will be expelled from school and fined or whatever the hell it is, depending on what level it is. No special teams flags. God, I hate them. So, with all that said, here we are now, entering week four, and we talked last week before we knew for sure what the Bucs were going to do, and we know they're starting Ryan Fitzpatrick now. But we talked last week about the decision that is forthcoming, and the big thing I hammered home last week, for those of you listening, was that, you know, live in the moment, let things play out. Usually week to week, if you just let the decision happen that week and stop trying to think ahead to things that don't need to be thought ahead to, usually things will present themselves and it'll be pretty evident what you need to be doing. And that has come to fruition this week, in my opinion, because Jameis Winston is back. He's been practicing this week. He was eligible as of, you know, after the game on Monday night. He's had his press conference, which went very well. Jameis, to his credit, whatever you think about him, said the right things. He was complimentary of Fitzpatrick. Said, hey, I just want to help. We're all pulling on the same rope. We all want to win. You know, I'm paraphrasing, but just exactly what you should say. And he's right. I mean, he was right to say that. So now it's week four, and we also said last week that if nothing else for this game against the Bears, even though I think the whole short week thing is overrated, I said this a long time ago when it was first coming out, before Fitzpatrick played as well as he did, when I was railing against the idea of Winston sitting an extra game, if you remember. I said, how could they not play Winston immediately once he's eligible? Why would you sit him for an extra game? This is, again, before Fitzpatrick played as well as he did. I said, who cares about a short week? Not a short week for Jameis, because he's suspended anyway. He's plenty rested. Play him. And you know, all that stuff about practice. And you know, a Monday night game changes your schedule a little bit in the NFL, but not as much as people think, as far as practice time and things like that. But what it does do, I said last week, is give the Bucs cover. This question is going to be out there every single week, no matter what. It's going to be out there as long as it's not clear-cut. The media, who I'm not saying the media is trying to stir things up and they're the bad guys, but it's their job. They're going to make this like a prominent, like, I want you to take a stand, Dirk Cutter. Here, Dirk Cutter, in this press conference, tell me right now, who's starting this week? And what happens if Winston doesn't play or Fitzpatrick plays well? I want you to say, who's starting next week then, too? Yeah, they're going to make you say all those things. You don't have to say them. And what I said was that this week provides cover for the Bucs politically because of the short week and because of the bye week afterward. you can say reasonably, oh, well, you know, no matter what, we're going to go with Fitz here because it's a short week and, you know, he's in a groove. Winston's just coming back. And then with the bye week after that, then we'll see where we are. So you can kick the can down the road a little bit, which is what they've done. And Fitzpatrick will start on Sunday, and I have no problem with that. I still think, and I'll keep saying this, I don't care how well Fitzpatrick plays, and he has played unbelievably well, including Monday night, if you take the three-game body of work, beyond my wildest dreams of what I thought he'd do before the season started. You know, he's 36. Like, the idea, people are still saying, hey, let's move Winston. Let's see if we can get something for him. And the idea of selling out on a 23 or to a 24-year-old face of the franchise, whether you like it or not, future of the franchise for sure. We could argue about face of the franchise, but future of the franchise. And you want to sell him up the river for a 36-year-old quarterback, regardless of how good he is asinine, and quite frankly, it's insane. I don't know how long Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to continue to play how he is. I hope it's really long. I hope he keeps playing well. I love him. But this team, in my opinion, is still only going as far as Jameis Winston takes it, both this year and down the road, certainly down the road. Again, you could argue about this year. Maybe Fitz just puts it all together for a full season. I don't know. I still think Jameis Winston's going to be the guy leading this team when it gets down to nutcracker time later in the year. And if he's not, that's okay. Again, that just means Fitzpatrick has done really well, barring injury. But for right now, the Bucs don't have to decide on anything, and they shouldn't decide on anything, and they shouldn't let anybody make them talk about deciding on anything. I'm okay with that. Because, again, you got your political cover. Okay, let's see what happens this week against the Bears. You know, try that. Hey, short week, Jameis, come on back. Let's get your back in. Haven't had a chance to talk to you yet. On and on and on. All that stuff makes sense, and you can say those things with a straight face because they're, one, they're true, and two, they're very plausible. And so that's what they've done. But long term, for me, nothing has changed. And I've hardly been a Jameis apologist. The whole reason we're even having all these conversations is his fault. If he hadn't done that stupid thing, whatever he did with the Uber driver, whatever you believe, he did something. If he hadn't, this never would have happened. And I don't know what the Bucs record would be right now. I don't know how he would have played in the first three games. It's an alternate universe that we never get to visit and find out anything about. But I do know that we're at where we're at right now, regardless of all that other stuff, and it doesn't really matter. So we'll see what Jameis Winston or what Ryan Fitzpatrick is able to do. I don't think this will turn into like a Steve Spurrier thing where every time Fitzpatrick throws a pick or something, you know, we immediately start, oh, well, should Jameis come in right now? No. But, you know, wait for it when you're watching the games on TV, because when you're watching on Sunday, and we're going to be going up against the Bears defense that's really good. You know, Khalil Mack, another 3-4 defense. The first two defenses the Bucs play weren't 3-4, and the Steelers had one. And in the first half, it took the Bucs a while to adjust to that. And then the second half, I thought they did. And I think playing against one this week will help having played against one week before. But you watch. Like, let's say Fitzpatrick makes a bad throw, or he puts together a couple of three and outs. You know, what's the director of that broadcast on Fox going to do? Sitting in his TV truck calling cameras. Every time Fitzpatrick makes a bad play, he's going to have Jameis Winston on camera six sitting there. He's going to go, ready, six, take six. And they're going to show Winston. Oh, there's Jameis Winston on the sideline. Is he putting a helmet on? Is he warming up? You know, every single, it's an ongoing thing now. It just is. It just is. This is what we have wrought. And again, it's Jameis's fault that it's this way. He can't go back to 2016 and change it. I think since what happened has happened, I think he's done and said all the right things. But, again, you can't go back and fix it. So we'll see what he's able to do if he gets the chance. But no matter what, just be ready for that. Like, it's going to be talked about by the announcers. It's going to be talked about in-game every time Fitzpatrick bounces a throw or if he throws a couple of picks. Cut to Winston on the sideline. Show it. Cut to Dirk Cutter. Is Winston talking to Dirk Cutter? Are they talking to each other? Cut to that camera. And, you know, the thing is, it doesn't matter. It's kind of like with the Monday Night Football thing, too. Like, I wanted the Bucs to do well on Monday Night Football, like I was saying at the top of the show, because that was their one chance in primetime for a national audience, and I was disappointed they didn't do better in front of a national audience. But you know what? This isn't college football. It doesn't actually matter. I wanted them to do well. I wanted to see their reputation increase. But nothing can stop the Bucs. Nothing can stop any team from getting where it wants to go. In college football, conceivably, something can. You take UCF last year, for example, who didn't get into the playoff. There's no committee in the NFL. They're not going to handpick teams that they think are the most deserving or have the best resume. It's a hardcore mathematical formula. We have divisions, we have standings, we have wild cards, and they can't stop you. You can look like crap. You can be a team everybody thinks is garbage, and yet somehow you're, you know, 9-7, 10-6, and you qualify. They can't touch you. And so, that's what I've been telling you guys these last few weeks as far as the whole Jameis Winston thing and Ryan Fitzpatrick thing. If you're truly a Buck fan, and we all have our biases and we all have our favorites, I've tried not to, and I actually do, you know, feel good about both guys. I don't feel good about Jameis and what he does off the field, but as a quarterback, I've been very high on Jameis from day one, and I have not wavered on that. If you've listened to this show, you know that. Ryan Fitzpatrick, obviously, what he's done on the field so far is unassailable. And I don't really care about being right or having picked the right one before it ended up coming out. I just want the Bucs to win. So if that's Fitzpatrick, great. If that's Jameis, great. And you can be that way too. Like, you don't have to be a Fitzpatrick guy or a Jameis guy or anything. Like, you don't have to be. And you don't have to be a fortune teller or a seer and say, oh, well, I think it's going to be Fitzpatrick. And then if you're wrong, feel bad because even though the Bucs are winning, it ended up being Winston. You don't have to care about what the reason is why the team's winning or if you called it or not. You don't have to do that. I said it last week and I will say it again. You don't have to do that. So, with all these things said, and again, if you want to email me, please do. I love hearing from you guys. Email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. BobbyGameday at yahoo.com on Twitter. I'm at Bobby Game Day. I want to read you an email from a listener I got. This was really cool. This was Yoav, who's originally from Israel. And he emailed me about the fridge schedule, which if you still want a fridge schedule, I'll still send you one. I still have the Microsoft file. Just email me again at bobbygameday@yahoo.com. It's a big color print schedule. I'll email you the file. You can do it on your color printer. We're only 3 games into the year. I'll still do it. But he was one of the ones that emailed me about one. And he said, oh, yeah, I'm from Israel. I'm a huge Bucks fan, on and on and on. He wanted a schedule. I sent him one. I said, hey, like, how did you get to become a Bucks fan? Like, what, you know, I'm always interested in the genesis of how people become truly loyal fans. And I'm not talking about people who say, you know, they're a Cowboys fan because they're Pop Warner team or silver and blue or whatever, and now they're a Cowboys fan, but then they really aren't even Cowboys fans to begin with. I'm talking about the hardcores, like people who really truly dig in and are loyal to a team and yet didn't have an obvious tie to that team when it all started. Yoav said, I visited the U.S. 7 or 8 times, lived in Chicago for a year. He said, Israelis travel a lot, and in 1999, I found myself in Varanasi, India, alone at a guest house where I met 2 Americans who were talking about football. So this is at, again, like almost like a hostel, I'm assuming, in India in 1999 when the Bucks were in the midst of their run to the NFC title game. He goes on, I already liked football, but wasn't really engaged with a specific team. They mentioned the name Keyshawn Johnson, which for some reason I thought was a very cool name. He had never heard of Keyshawn Johnson before. And that's it, really, he says. I think he was still with the Jets at that time, but when I got back to Israel, I found out about him going to the Bucks, and the rest is history. The Buccaneers have been a huge part of my life daily ever since. He even sent me a picture of his schedule, and Yoav, if you're out there, I love the picture, man. He's got the schedule up in his office. He was wearing his Bucks shirt. That made me feel good. That was a cool thing. Because if this show is about one thing, okay, whether it's wins or losses or X's and O's and all that stuff, it's about loving the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I'm born and raised in Tampa, and like I've told you guys before, Buccaneers are the first thing I ever loved, period, outside of my family. Like, you go through all the things in my life, and one of the reasons the bond runs so strong is because there aren't any things in my life that are the same here at age 38 as were the same at age 7. But the Bucks are, like, that's one of the, like, the only thing outside of my actual family that has been a constant in my life the entire time. And so for me, it was automatic. It was easy. But for someone like Yoav here, who, like, again, didn't even know who the Bucks were in the 90s until he was at a hostel in India and a couple of guys were talking about Keyshawn Johnson, and out of that, something grew. And he's been along for the ride ever since. And you might have said in 1999, oh, well, this guy, he's jumping on the bandwagon. The Bucks are really good. They win the Super Bowl in 2002. He missed out on all the tough stuff. Well, the last decade probably been a pretty good, just quick Cliff's Notes version of what the 80s and most of the 90s were like for Bucks fans who are a little bit older. And, you know, all you gotta want to do is want to be there, man. And there ain't no credentials like, oh, I've been a fan since this long or that long. As long as you're in and you're loyal and you're having fun with it, that's what matters. And we're gonna have fun this weekend, hopefully watching the Bucks beat the Bears and things like that. Yoav, thank you for the email. Again, if you want to email me, the address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com and on Twitter @bobbygameday. I'm gonna go ahead and wrap it up for this week. Thanks to the Joes for having me on. Thanks to our sponsor, Bill Curry Ford, for always taking great care of me and taking great care of you guys. Thanks to all of you for listening. I'll be back next week. I'm still contemplating, you know, right now we're sticking with one a week, but after Sunday, I might just say, hey, I gotta go right now, and I might start recording something for Monday morning or Tuesday morning. And you can give me your thoughts on that if you want to. But thanks to all of you for listening, and truly thank you to the Joes for allowing me this platform on the best website there is for Buccaneer coverage. Always hot, always ready. Literally, go away for a couple hours, come back. There's three new stories up there. They are prolific. They are on top of it, and that will continue to be the case. I'm Bobby Fenton. That is the Free Stretch as we enter week four in the National Football League. Take care of yourselves. Be safe. Have a great weekend. Let's get OW going into the bye. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, and go Bucks.